You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Thanks for downloading this week's episode of the Attacking Scrum podcast. Never an easy one when Wales lose, but particularly a performance like that and to a Scotland side that, we haven't lost to Scotland in Wales since 2002, so it was always going to be a bitter pill to swallow when it did happen. But anyway, myself and Dan caught up this week to have a chat about it and try and get a few answers, although unfortunately there are more questions than there are answers at this stage. But luckily, we had lots of great questions from our listeners. So, thanks to everyone who sent questions in. I think we got through all of them. So, hopefully you'll enjoy that. It's always good to hand over the show to listeners, particularly after a Wales game. So hopefully you will enjoy it. Before we get underway, of course, away from the international or the current internationals, it was a sad news about JJ Williams dying, which is, really, really sad. And a player who, before my time growing up, but I watched so many videos of JJ playing in that wonderful side of the 70s. So had a massive impact on me. I must have been one of very few kids in South London running around, kicking a ball, pretending to be the likes of JJ Williams and Barry John. And I know he would have had that impact on a hell of a lot of players, a hell of a lot of young people in Wales growing up, and certainly those who enjoyed watching him at the time. So very sad news, and obviously, thoughts with the Williams family this week. But very, very sad indeed. Right, so almost time to get on with the show. Of course, a quick word as always for our sponsors. So Coffee Trades. If you want to get your hands on some great quality coffee, you can do that at socoffeetrades.co.uk. Thanks for downloading and hope you enjoy the podcast. And we will have an extra one for you this week, which will be regional focused. So this is solely international. And then later in the week, hopefully on Wednesday, we'll have a regional one for you too. So a little bonus for you there, even if Wales couldn't provide us with a bonus on the pitch. Right, on with the show.
For JJ Williams into the 25, Williams kicks it on, this could be a try. Williams has scored. That little chip through by Gareth Edwards really caught the Springbok defence by surprise. Williams got his boot as he chipped ahead, kicked it through, the bounce went his way, and JJ Williams has put the line.
How long is it since you've had an alcoholic drink?
It is. It's over 12 months. What's it going to be? 14 months.
How close were you to drinking during yesterday's game?
I've broken it. No. I had four bottles of scotch. I was not tempted, actually, Jed.
Yeah,
only because there was nothing to get excited about.
How poor was that as a performance?
It was 10 out of 10 for being poor, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And the game as a whole was extremely tough to watch. And I was so disappointed because I was really excited about this international, final Six Nations game for us. And it just didn't deliver on any front.
No, it didn't, did it? There was just, because thing is, it wasn't even like we defended really poorly, but and we lost, but scored three tries in the process or created lots. It was a terrible game of rugby for the neutral, and if you're Welsh, it's the absolute worst of both worlds because you've ended up losing the game as well.
Yeah, it's rare, isn't it, that there was no. I can't actually think of a passage of play, a piece of skill. Almost, I can't think of anything that really got me off the edge of my seat or me sort of cheering or So there was just nothing there that lifted me. Did you see anything at all?
I remember vaguely getting excited when Liam Williams took that high ball.
Yeah.
You know, that was just like a little glimpse going, oh God, I remember these players are good, aren't they? I remember when these players were great. It just, it was just one of those little things that spiked a little bit of memory of the performances we've seen in the past, because it just felt, it wasn't even just like it was flat. It was really, really, truly awful. That was, you know, it's one of the worst performances that we've seen from Wales for a very long time.
Yeah. Where do you think that stands in terms of performances?
I mean,
you've got a good memory, haven't you?
I have got a good memory.
You're going to be going back, yeah.
But you've got to have a good memory to grow up in the 90s watching Wales and think about what the worst defeats are. I'm too young to remember losing to Romania, so it can't be that one. I think the worst defeat I've seen for Wales, do you know what? The worst one under Gatland, Samoa, was bad. Samoa on a Friday night. Do you remember that one? That was really awful. And this, I would say, was on a par with that one, that game that lasted like 4 hours where we lost to France with all the scrummaging at the end when Howley was in charge.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'd say this was on a par with that.
I was intrigued to see what you'd say on that, because I knew you'd go into the archives and pull out and pull out something.
The Archives of Pain, which is a little Manic Street Preachers reference there, which will lead us nicely onto our first question, actually, Dan.
Ooh, okay.
Of course, you may remember good friend of the show, former PR manager for the Manic Street Preachers, Yestin George. He was quick off the mark to get a question into us today, as you can probably imagine. He's been, you know, the last few times he's been on the show, he's been his absolute most cheery. But I think it's safe to say that performance yesterday pulled out some of the melancholic tendencies that we've come to know and love from Yestin. And his question is, can you ever see a situation where the WRU acts fast to stop the decline? Plus, if we were to enter the world of fantasy rugby, how much would it cost to lure Pat Lamb away from Bristol? let's take that first part of that. Can you see a situation where the WRU acts fast to stop the decline? I think it's safe to say he's getting at moving Wayne Pivak on there.
Well, the break clause is got a break clause, isn't he, at the 2-year point in his 4-year contract. I can't see anything happening before that point, because of the, you know, financially we're in probably the worst possible place, aren't we? So I can't see him being moved on, really. Can you?
No, that won't happen. It would take like a losses of 60 points against Ireland and 60 against England, I think, in order for that to happen. Not unthinkable at the moment, but I think it would take something like that. And even then, I think you'd be relying on Pivak to resign rather than him get moved on. Because you're right, you can't afford to pay off a year of his contract right now, can you? I don't know how much he's on a year, but it's going to be the kind of money you just haven't got that money knocking around. So, however, it's not, you know, I mean, this whole break clause thing right now, obviously we're staring down a bit of down the barrel of the gun at the moment. And you kind of look at that break clause and think, well, it has given a degree of insurance, because if he was on a 4-year contract. But what I would say to that is, only 2 weeks ago we were saying you've got to judge him at the end of the autumn period. You can't judge him now. Are we in danger of getting away from ourselves and going, right, actually, it has been a bad few performances, but could they all turn around against Ireland in 2 weeks? Could it turn around against England? What's your assessment of that? Are we judging it too quickly?
I don't think we're judging him too quickly. I think we're, you know, we're going to be judgmental, aren't we? But is it too early, I suppose, to call for his head? I would say yes. At the moment, the signs don't look good, do they? And the big part of that for me is that I'm still perplexed at what we're trying to do. Mm. I can't see a style that we're trying to adopt or have adopted. It's it's a mixture of many different things, which then is, you know, culminating in a mess, really. And I think the players look frustrated. You can see it on their faces. So I think we do need to give them time, but as we touched upon briefly last week, it's, you know, you've got to build, haven't you? And this was never going to be an easy task, because the players and everyone around that team have been coached by someone for 12 years. So almost there needs to be a mental reset, really. Which is a really, really difficult thing to do, isn't it? It's a difficult place to come in at. But I think the players need to know exactly what and the systems in which they're playing. And if we still get losses, but we're working towards something, then you back the systems and eventually it will come off, won't it? And you've touched upon, you know, how long it took Wayne Pivac at the Scarlets to get things turned around there. You know, it can take time, can't it? But I think there were signs there at the Scarlets relatively early on, I think, of the way in which he wanted to play, the Pivac way. But here at the moment, there isn't.
It's really interesting you say that, because yeah, obviously you mentioned it last week and we've had it on a fair few times in the past few shows. And I noted that Ken Owens before the game said that obviously we're trying to play with a bit more width on it. And it's interesting because that's kind of the first, you know, the first time you've heard it from the horse's mouth, so to speak. You've heard it from players. And again, yesterday didn't really show much evidence of that whatsoever. It just felt like a mishmash of systems, as you've said. But ultimately, I kind of think, you know, it doesn't matter what style of rugby you're trying to play. If you get stuffed that much at the breakdown, that's the thing. Every time we took the ball into contact, it was either incredibly slow or we got turned over. And it's the same as it was, just could not win the collisions.
Yeah, we couldn't. Yeah, there's nothing, you can't play wide, you can't play narrow, you can't do anything, can you, if you don't win the breakdown, or at least you're sort of level at the breakdown. But we got completely annihilated. And again, on the collisions, I think they were, you know, they were on top as well, and, you know, slightly better than us as well in the set piece. So all the, you know, there's a lot of factors that made it almost impossible for us to gain any sort of momentum. We couldn't build any phase play. We couldn't build anything, could we? I can't remember a time when we went forward really with the ball in hand in the backs. It must have been one of the most frustrating games ever to be involved in as a back. And that frustration seemed evident as well in the forwards. It just was exceptionally poor, wasn't it?
The thing that worries me is we looked at selection last week, and when the game finished yesterday, I thought, you know what, we can talk about selection on this week's show. But to me, it doesn't make a blind bit of difference, because he brought in players who you thought would have made a positive impact at that area of the game. Rowlands adds a lot of bulk. Shane Lewis Hughes, we thought, well, that, you know, that's going to add stuff. And I'm not singling them out as in they didn't do it. I just mean, as a unit, adding that level of physicality in there didn't really do a thing, did it? It just, every time we were taking the ball up in pods of two, and we either got turned over or we ended up sending loads of people in to try and free the ball because it was so slow.
Yeah, that's right. It looked as if, you know, we'd addressed maybe where we thought we went wrong last week, and it didn't work again. So I think the main points here are balance. Mm. We're not getting the balance right in the front row. We're not getting the balance right in the, well, possibly in the second row. And we're certainly not getting the balance right in the back row. And then without that, the backs could be the best backs in the world. But unless we've got the front row and the pack looking and working as a cohesive unit, we can't do anything. You cannot do anything at all. And at the moment, it's not working. It's not gelling. So they're all very, very good players. But as a unit, cohesive unit, we're not there. And that's where I think the change is going to have to be made. Front row and back row.
All right. Well, we will talk about selection at the end of the show, because if nothing else, it's always a bit of fun. It does give us a chance to play selector, so we will do that. But let's crack on with some more of the questions now that have come in from listeners. This one's from Jonathan Davis, who's as he says, been hogging the questions over the last few weeks. But there's some interesting ones for you to get stuck into here, Dan. Firstly, is James Davis physical enough to play international rugby at flanker?
So I thought James Davis was a little hard done by yesterday. I thought Mr. Braces, if I can call him that, had a pretty indifferent game. He refed Scotland with one hat on and Wales with another.
There was a couple of calls. I did think that.
Yeah, and I don't want to blame the ref, because it was a poor game, and you know they were the better side. But I some of the decisions I couldn't get my head around again. Similarly to the French game, I thought James Davis had three definite turnovers, maybe four. And you know, if we had those turnovers, then does his performance become are people off his back a little bit, possibly, because he tends to change the games when he wins those turnovers. But I thought he didn't have his finest game, did he? He did get a little bullied at times. But I'm going to say, yeah, he can still, you know, he's good enough to play international rugby. And I do think it's a unit thing that isn't working at the moment. And I think physically across the park, pretty much bar, you know, Shane Lewis Hughes and Alan Wynn, we weren't there in the back.
I think he's getting singled out a bit. I didn't think he had a particularly good game. I'm not overly convinced he's an international open side. You know, I don't think he's. I think if everyone's fit, I can't see James Davis being there. However, no. I do think.
But he wouldn't be, would he?
He's being singled out for things here that aren't really necessarily his fault. It's a lot more than, oh, you know, if Tipperick had played, we'd have won the game. I don't think it was as straightforward as that, because do you know what? Some absolute world-class players, not just international class players, world-class players looked bang average yesterday. Toby looked, you know, I know that, you know, it was the little kick, but even the kick that set up the try was worrying to me. I don't think I've ever seen Toby kick the ball, because he doesn't need to. You know, it was something
especially
very,
when
very
we were
odd
in that,
about that.
Especially when that sort of typified the how we, the feeling around us, didn't it? That we were kicking everything away. You know, at that point there, that was the time that we should have probably kept hold of the ball, because there was potentially something on, wasn't there?
Mm.
But Faletau kicked it. So if Faletau's kicking the ball away, we know that something isn't quite right.
Yeah, and a lot of the body language looked really, really odd to me. There was a lot of players who really looked like they were struggling with their body language. And they're the kind of things, you know, sometimes, like, you know, I take stats with a pinch of salt, like you said, but I'm sure the stats don't make for pretty reading just today, particularly lineouts lost and penalties conceded. But there are other things that you can't quite tell just by looking at stats. When you've got players like Liam Williams and Lee Halfpenny struggling to pass the ball to one another, then you know something's wrong, because those players are world-class players and they just looked like they'd never played together. And they're players who play together, or admittedly, they've not played together much at the Scarlets, if they have indeed been on the pitch at the same time, but they've played together for Wales numerous times. So it was all just very, very worrying, that makes you think this is not just we've had a bad day at the office or a few personnel changes will make this. It makes you think that fundamental things are wrong here.
Yeah, it didn't look like a happy camp, did it?
No, it didn't.
I picked up on that body language as well. We didn't have any tonic, any energy in the way in which we held ourselves. So not taking out the performance itself, the way in which the boys were carrying themselves. We didn't look up for it. We didn't look sort of particularly great place mentally then. And you looked at the Scottish boys and they looked relaxed. They looked really sort of really comfortable, really easygoing, and they looked as if they were going to win. You know, when the camera flicked around at the beginning, they looked like a side that was just going to go out and win, really. And I don't know why I really feel that, but I it just yeah, it was, we look a little sad.
Yeah, it just looked, there wasn't really that niggle, that intensity, that fire. It just looked, there was almost a feeling of inevitability around that. And again, these are just things you pick up on. And, if we'd have won it with a couple of late penalties, then maybe things have been different. But it all just seemed it seemed inevitable that we were going to lose that game. And the players looked so low on confidence, which is really bad considering that we're only two games into a long autumn campaign. But that brings us on to this next one, Dan. This one's from Robert Giannotti. What's more important for Wales ahead of the autumn series, performances or results? He suggests performances, given that the seedings for the Rugby World Cup are now set. And it's all about building for Six Nations. What do you think?
I'd agree with him totally. I think performance at the moment. If we'd pinched that game yesterday with a couple of late kicks, I still think we'd have huge concerns.
Mm.
So I think it's got to be performance. We need to see what we're working towards. We need to see us building, building a style, building a way forward. And for me, that's going to be critically important. And almost you could say that we're in quite a privileged position because the seedings are already sorted, that we can actually do that. And the pressure is obviously massively on, but we've got to see performance, haven't we? And I do think a big part of the more and more I've been thinking about today, I do think a big part of it is going to be mental, because we've lost all we've known for so long. We've been so successful, so battle hardened, so mentally strong, and it's something that isn't being talked about at the moment, is it? I think we're mentally weak at the moment because we've lost, our guys at the helm. And it's showing in the players.
Yeah, I think it is. And we always knew this was going to be a difficult act to follow, Gatland. And we said that the kind of the worst case scenario is it's like following Alex Ferguson at Man United, and we all know what a disaster that was for David Moyes. And it's kind of felt like that at times, because it's not like you had a proven international class coach to come in and do the job. If Steve Hansen had come in and taken the job again, I think you'd feel a lot more confident, because you've got a player, a coach who's gone out and won a huge amount of stuff. Now, Wayne Pivac, I thought, did an excellent job at the Scarlets, and particularly that winning the title and getting to the European Cup semis. But it's not, it's not like you were hiring Gatland, who had, even before all the stuff he'd done with Wales and the Lions, had won Heineken Cups and Guinness Premierships. That they're big things to win. He'd won them by the hatful. And so you felt that walking into the dressing room, he commanded the respect of the players. Now, does Wayne Pivac have that? I'm not sure at the moment. And I'm not, I'm not writing him off right now, but you have to base it on the evidence we've seen so far, and it's not particularly encouraging.
Yeah, we didn't answer yesterday's question about Pat Lamb, did we? But if Pat Lamb walked into the change room, you'd imagine there'd be instant respect with there, and there'd be something different coming from him because he does things in a different way. But I think we almost need to have a mental reset. Really, they need to send in the psychologist, really, and because it's pretty much the same set of players, isn't it? And they've got a new manager coming in then, if we can call him that. So all the coaching setup's different, but the players are more or less the same. And that's going to be extremely difficult for the players, because they're going to be harping back to what they've always known, because they've had so long under Gatland, and so much success, and Edwards, and all these super, super strong characters that just kept things very, very simple, even simple on the chat level, didn't they? It was no nonsense, but everyone knew where they were at all times, pretty much. And it's almost like they're almost sort of bereaved of that, aren't they? It's gone. And it just struck me today that they looked like a team of sad individuals that had lost something, and that is what's happened, isn't it?
Yeah, I know what you mean about sad, and it goes back to the body language thing. It just looked like the players looked lost. Now, again, we said this; these are not an average set of players. Yeah, there's a few new faces in there, but these are proven international and world class players in there, and that's the thing that is a worry. Is that if that's the best tune you can get out of them, then there's a hell of a lot of work to be done, and not a huge amount of time to do it. And the thing you worry about is that when you start having bad performance after bad performance, that's when you worry about a coach losing the dressing room. If he'd have come in and won his first, you know, even I'm not saying come in and win a Grand Slam as Gatland did, but if Pivac had come in and, you know, we'd beaten Ireland away in Dublin, or we'd beaten England at Twickenham, you feel like that would start to have a bit of confidence. I and this is based on nothing other than the performances, I don't feel like they're hugely confident in that coaching setup. I really don't.
It certainly appears that way, doesn't it? Yeah, if we were scoring tries out wide, you know, seeing, you know, Faletau in the wide channels where they want him to be playing, but still losing, we would still be disappointed, and we'd be whinging away on the podcast and, you know, trying to make a few changes. But equally, I'm sure we'd be balanced enough to say that was exciting. If we can tighten up in this area, the wins are going to come. At the moment, we can't talk like that. It's so far off, isn't it? There's no performance. That's the worry.
There's not exactly that.
That's the worry. And the players aren't bad. You're right. They're not bad players. They're all great players. So, you know, I've read a few things about, you know, making huge changes, maybe starting again. That's not the answer for me. You know, these guys are not, they're still top players. And yeah, we need to look at other things, really.
Right. Well, we've still got loads more to get through, Dan. We're going to take one more before we take a quick break. This one is from John Lewis, and it says, how often do we score from a driving line out? Why can't Humphreys coach us to do this? If we had this weapon in our armoury, surely that would be of significant benefit to us. Why can't we coach from a driving line out? It's hard to judge on yesterday's, because we couldn't even secure our own line out, could we? But yeah, do you feel like this is a real area of concern for us at the moment?
Yeah, it is an area of concern, isn't it? I mean, I think our line-out has been pretty indifferent, isn't it, over the years? And even it has been poor under Gatland at times, to be fair, wasn't it? I remember us talking about maybe bringing in a line-out consultant then just to really sort it out. But
I never did get that call.
No, yeah. You didn't get that, did you? But yeah, it'd be a great thing, wouldn't it? Gosh, if we had a driving line out, it would be extremely handy at the moment. I think if we had a line out, it'd be good. But yeah, you know, Humphreys is very well regarded, isn't he? And I guess, you know, this might heap the pressure a little bit then on Pivac, that Humphreys has done wonderful things. He's highly regarded, isn't he? Coach Stephen Jones is very, very highly regarded as well. So there's some good coaches in there.
But could you not say that Pivac was, you know, he's highly regarded enough to get the job, certainly highly regarded amongst Scarlet fans, and, you know, had won stuff. Like I say, you know, I've kind of put my thoughts across that, you know, I think in an ideal world, you'd have gone for another Galactico coach, you know, an out and out superstar coach, because I think at international rugby you do need that. But, you know, is it kind of unfair to blame it all on Pivac and exonerate the Stephen Joneses and the John Humphreys from it?
Yeah, well, yes, because we just don't know, do we? So it's speculation, isn't it? But there, you know, if we looked at it as an organization, then it's the guy at the very helm, the top guy, isn't it, that gets the, you know, takes the praise when things are going very, very well. But yeah, carries the can if it's not, and, you know, he is the top man there, isn't he?
I think that's the thing that really, that is a real concern, because, you know, obviously, Rob Howley came in for a lot of flack when he was attack coach of Wales. And, you know, there were times when we kind of criticised him based on what we were seeing from Wales's backs. But that was during a period that you never really felt that the problem was the head coach. You know, you just simply didn't feel that. And that's the thing that worries me, is it's really hard to pinpoint, but there are so many things wrong that it's not just a question of looking at it and thinking, well, you know what, the backs have been great, but the forwards aren't firing, or it'd be great if we had a bit more imagination in the backs. It's just from absolutely everything at the moment is poor. I can't see one facet of the game that we're doing well. The kicking game was poor yesterday. The set piece was awful. We've already stressed how bad we were at the breakdown, and we can't win collisions. And the back showed very little imagination and couldn't really pass the ball to one another. So that's the thing that's really concerning for me, is because every aspect is going wrong. That's where you tend to lead yourself to looking at the head coach rather than just one particular aspect.
Yeah, it is. And the body language as well, that tends to then fall, doesn't it, onto whoever's at the top as well. So, you know, those things have to be looked at, don't they? Have to work out why we're in this place, and look to address them. Maybe there are things going on that we don't know, but there certainly seems to be something not right there at the moment, I would say.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And there's plenty more people who want to get their questions across as well. So we're going to be having a look at those in the second half. And as we say, we will have a look at the squad to face Ireland, which will be in a fortnight's time. And we're going to do all of that after this quick break. Right, Dan, we're going to continue with the post-mortem from I call it a game. It was barely even a game, was it? The debacle at Parker Scarlett's. And I'm going to take this one next up from Gary Mason. Tackle area at Gundogan. Scrum buckling. Line-out very nervous. Although, granted, wind was an issue. And then a few questions. Who the hell comes in against Ireland, which we'll talk about at the end of the show? Are the old guard at their end? Should Pivak bite the bullet and start from scratch? You touched on a few of these in the first half, but you don't think it's about starting from scratch, do you?
No, I don't. I don't think it's about starting from scratch. I think it's performance. We need to get more of a performance out of those players. Can those players all play better? Yes, they can. And we need to look at why they're not playing anywhere near as well as they can do. And that, for me, that's got to be fundamental. That's got to be first thing that's on that whiteboard as to why we can't get a performance going at the moment.
Why can't we?
Well, again, we're speculating, aren't we? And I there seems to be something that's not quite right there. So potentially that's going to lead us to Pivak, isn't it? But I think that we have to work on the guys and properly reset and look at where, you know, how we want to play and implement things and changes very, very slowly. It just looks like we've maybe tried to change things all over the park that has led to confusion. I don't think it's been helped by the situation that we're, you know, by COVID, then also by injury. So if we look at, you know, the balance isn't quite right, is it? But equally, it's not, you know, that's not entirely the coach's fault, because we've had quite a lot of injuries in the back row, haven't we? I mean, the back row that started again has never played together. So there has been things that have gone against us. But I think we've got to go back to basics. Start being very, very physical. Start being more aggressive. I think we're not nasty enough.
Surely you don't need to be coached to be told to be aggressive enough. You know, surely players like Will Rowlands and Alan Wynne Jones, who we're used to seeing as real enforcers on the pitch, surely you don't need to coach them into being aggressive. I mean, that's in their nature, isn't it? We've heard, you know, we've spoken so many times to people who've trained with Alan Wynne Jones and go, we don't even like training with him because every time he takes on the pitch, he wants to take your head off. You know, that's
yeah. But he brings that, doesn't he? He still put in a performance, didn't he? Where he was very physical, but it's others around him that we need to be dominant in every single area. But I think if the balance isn't right, then you can't quite get that dominance. So the balance at the moment isn't quite working. I think we're missing a couple of leaders. So in the front row, I don't think we've got a front row lead. Well, we haven't got a front row leader at the moment at all. And a massive part of rugby, I think, is having that, you know, Ken Owens is a monumental loss, isn't he? Bigger than probably any of us. We knew it was going to be a loss, but I think we're really feeling that at the moment. And it's just that core guy in the middle there. He's so vocal, leads, hits. I think we need to look at the collision area, and Wayne Pivot maybe goes back to players that he wouldn't ordinarily sort of pick, maybe, but just strip it right back. So yeah, I know it does sound a bit odd, doesn't it? Saying we need to up the ingress, you know, say to the players, be more aggressive. Not in that way. I mean, just in some of the selections, and go back to a little bit more of the basics, and then start fine tuning from there.
Selection is something I'd like to build on here, Dan. And I think that these are the things that lead you back to Pivac. Now, at the start of this, you know, when he named his autumn squad, Shane Lewis-Hughes wasn't in that squad at all. Now, I know there've been injuries, you know, Moriarty's picked up a knock, Navidi's not fit, but how you can go from not being in the squad to being your starting six. Now, again, I'm quite happy with him as starting six. I'm a massive fan of his, but I find it odd that a player who wasn't in your squad 2.5 weeks ago is now your starting six. I also find it really odd that...
Same with James Davis.
Same with... Yeah. I mean, obviously...
Really?
It is. I suppose that with Navidi injured and then Tipperick getting injured, that is something that's kind of slightly different, because you know you do need a specialist seven, and I suppose he's the only one who's fit at the moment with Tipperick picking up tonsillitis. I think that one's slightly different. But then again, the scrum half situation. Again, Dan, you might know a bit more of this than me. That who were the scrum halves who were fit? Was Hardy in contention at all?
Yeah, I believe he was fit, but he was told.
So how can Hardy go from being the third choice to Lloyd Williams coming in and sitting on the bench again?
I believe Hardy was told that he wouldn't be involved in the first two games, and they stuck to that. So if there was an injury, Lloyd had already been tipped off that he was going to be coming up. But it sounds strange, doesn't it?
It does sound strange, and it is really strange. I don't get that. You know, you've picked a big enough squad that surely from within there you can pick players who are going to be, if you've had the conviction to pick them in the first place, surely you've got the conviction to put them on the pitch. You can't just have them there for carrying tackle bags. Which
yeah, you wonder how that would sit with Hardy, don't you? He's been selected, but then there's an injury. But he's been told he's not now involved until.
And they're the things you've got to get. They're the things you've got to get right. And again, I don't know. I don't know if there is an injury with Hardy. If that's something I've missed, then apologies for that. But yeah, that seems very odd.
It was all pre-planned. Apparently, right. it was all arranged beforehand. So Lloyd knew, and.
Well, then why not have four scrum halves in the squad to start with? Have four scrum halves in there. Release Lloyd to play for Cardiff if that's what you wanted to do. But all of this is very, very wishy-washy for my liking. And again, I don't think you'd have seen it from Gatland. And again, look, it's difficult to go back and compare. But I'm just saying that I don't think you see that from a top class head coach who is confident in his position. I just think these are all a bit knee-jerk, you know, God, what can we do to try and freshen things up? What about Shane Lewis-Hughes? Maybe I should have picked him in the first place. It just all feels a little bit panicked to me.
Does it make you think that there's, you know, that could be going on elsewhere then across the camp in other, you know, not other situations then, but confusion and cracks start to
possibly. And again, you know, look, we're speculating here, and that's the thing. It's difficult, and naturally you do, because you get frustrated when you see Wales play that badly. But certainly the signs aren't good, and it's a combination of all these things, not just the performance, but like we said, the selection policy has been very odd. Not just he should be picking two fetchers, or he should be picking more balanced 6, 7, 8. The fact that you've got players coming in from outside the squad straight into the starting lineup, and this strange situation at scrum half, and you've got Dan Bigger playing a whole game against France. Or virtually a whole game, 72 minutes, when he's clearly not fit and has gone off with a knock again on Saturday. All of these things are just really, really odd. And they're the things you have to get right at international level. So a combination of all of that, plus the body language, all of these things just make you think that's not a happy camp. And it doesn't feel like there's a huge amount of leadership coming from Pivac. And these are the things he's going to have to address. He's going to have to start leading that team and saying, right, we're going into battle, and you've got to follow me. But at the moment, it doesn't feel like they are.
I'd agree with you. Yeah, it certainly doesn't.
All right, let's take this one. This one's from Rugby 24/7. Are Wales facing a Gareth Jenkins situation? Is history repeating itself?
Well, it does look that way at the moment, doesn't it? I've said it earlier. I do want to give him a bit more. You know, we need to give him some more time, don't we? But if the performances don't start to change and build, and we can see where we're going, then the pressure's only going to continue and ramp up, isn't it? It really is. It's you know, you don't get many chances, do you, at international, and you know, there's a couple of lives already gone, I think, at the moment.
Yeah, do you know what? Actually, talking about it, you know, the Gareth Jenkins kind of comparison, it does remind me of that, actually. And do you know what? When you go back to the start of the show and you said, yeah, how bad a defeat was that? It reminds me of those defeats against Scotland in 07, against Italy in 07, where you just felt like we were getting completely done, and the opposition had done their homework on us, and we just couldn't match them. And, you know, with the greatest of respect to Scotland and Italy of that era and of now, they're sides that you feel you should be beating, you know.
Because they didn't play that well, did they?
I didn't think that was a particularly impressive Scotland performance. And as you know, I think they've got some fabulous players, but they're generally moving in the right direction. But still, you know, I didn't think that was their best performance, and they managed to get that win, and they looked pretty, you know.
It was almost like they were toying with us, like a cat sort of playing with a, you know, playing with a mouse, just waiting to, you know, waiting to kill it. It was just embarrassing, wasn't it? Like Scotland have got some great players. Yeah. And they, you know, they're a far improved side, aren't they? And, you know, Tandy coming in has done wonders on the defense. Mm. We've seen that from the lack of tries they've conceded and points they've conceded, you know, during this Six Nations. But they didn't play well, but they didn't need to, did they? That's the most disappointing thing. And again, against France, I didn't think France played well, but they played. They you know, a couple of their stars had a couple of great tries, but we were poor, and they didn't need to play particularly well again. It was just and that's the most disappointing thing. If we're well and truly beaten, I think me and you are balanced enough, and the Welsh public as well, to go, do you know what, we played well. They were just far better. But it's not that, is it?
I don't know. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And again, I'd like to think we're balanced enough to say that, you know, when we've been, and we weren't the best side yesterday. But I feel like Scotland won that by playing 6.5 out of 10. You know, it wasn't like a world. Scotland have played a lot better than that against us and lost. And yeah, that's the thing that's really disappointing, is it's just that Wales were so, so poor. Yes, conditions are difficult, but I just think that it was about the fact that the all-round performance was so, so bad that Scotland didn't even need to play well and beat us. And Scotland have not won in Wales since 2002. You know, that is a long old time, Dan, when you play them at home every 2 years.
That's a long time, isn't it? 18 years. my maths is poor, but that's, yeah, it's a long time. And also they had, you know, they were decimated by injuries, weren't they, in the back line in the final 9 or 10 minutes. And I know they've got players that can play in different positions, but still we still didn't put any pressure on, did we? Or build or do anything. We couldn't capitalise on that at all.
No, you're absolutely right. We couldn't. And that's just what makes it just, yeah, beyond frustrating. It's the stuff that makes you get angry, doesn't it? But there we go. Right, we have got another one to finish on before we take a look at changes we might make, Dan. And this one is from Lost in Yorkshire. So what's going on with Wales? Is it that players are not taking on board Wayne Pivac's philosophy and reverting to type? Is it two, that Pivac is not fully installing his own philosophy and picking players that fit, e.g. bigger as a 10? Or is it three, players lack confidence in him?
It seems to be at the moment that it's a bit of all three, isn't it, at the moment? Mm-hmm. There certainly appears to be a lack of confidence, I suppose, in their, as we touched upon, their body language, the way in which they're playing. They don't quite know. Players are, you know, making very basic errors then, uncharacteristic errors. That is unusual. I think that some of Bigger, for instance, at 10, I think Bigger can play and can fit into the way in which we believe Pivac wants to play then.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of a myth. You know, obviously not a Barry John of a running 10, but he is able to play in different ways. You know, we've seen some nice glimpses for Northampton, particularly before lockdown. You know, he's playing some nice stuff at the start of the year or the start of the season. And, you know, we saw a few glimpses against Italy. And I think it is a bit of a myth that he is just a kicking 10. I think there is a bit more to him than that. And I don't think that if you picked Rhys Patchell to start at 10, much as I'm a big fan of his, I don't think all of our problems go away, because again, you could have Dan Carter playing at 10, but if you're getting stuffed that much at the set piece and at the breakdown, he's going to have bugger all to do with the ball.
Yeah, exactly. The ball he's been given has been such poor quality. And, you know, if Patchell was to start at 10, I, you know, quite a lot of, he is quite weak in the tackle. There was a couple of players went over him again yesterday, didn't they? And so, no, I think Dan Bigger can, you know, it will be fine. Just the very fact that we're answering these sorts of questions, aren't we, about has Pivac, you know, lost the change? It takes us onto this, doesn't it? Because of the way the performance levels just aren't there. So I think it's probably a combination of all three on those. Mm. Part of it is that we are going to feel the pressure's on. And I think when the pressure is on, yeah, you do tend to revert to a game plan that you've known and that's worked for, you know, for many, many years. But I'm intrigued to know whether or not we are trying to play a little bit more direct than, and sort of back towards what Warren, you know, the side that Warren made us into. But yet we still didn't perform in that way, because we did pick, you know, we picked a few sort of powerhouses, didn't we, to come in and maybe look to win collisions and try and compete more at the breakdown. But obviously the balance didn't work on the weekend.
I don't think it's just balance. That's the thing. I just think that it all looks so odd. Like, I keep coming back to those two man pods going in, just looked completely wrong. And I don't think it's personnel. That second row, I think, should be good enough to beat Scotland. That back row, admittedly, they've not played together on paper, and you've lost Tipperick, who's a proven international level performer. But it's more than that. It's more than that to me. Like I say, I've never seen Toby drift in and out of games as much as he has done this season for Wales. And the whole thing at the breakdown, not just us winning our own ball, but we didn't threaten theirs. And Not at all. I know a certain degree of that's to the referee, but the only time, you know, I thought the best player at the breakdown was Lee Halfpenny.
Yeah, he had a good game. Yeah.
And that's a worry, isn't it? You know, as fantastic.
2 weeks in a row, isn't it?
2 weeks in a row, he's won the only turnover penalties I can remember. And it's, these are the things that worry me. And I don't know, that's what leads me to think that it's the players I'm not confident in Pivac at the moment, and it's very early on in his tenure for that to be the case, and it is worrying, and it's going to have to be addressed quickly, and they have to get. This is why I think perhaps to go back to the earlier question from Robert, you've got to get some results, because I think as much as anything, you need the players to buy into all of this, and at the moment I don't feel like I don't think they have the confidence. That's the biggest problem for me. I can't, we don't know that, but I'm just basing that on the things that I've seen on the pitch.
What did you think of the numbers we were committing or not committing?
It felt like we got it wrong every time. I felt like we did not have a clear game plan there as to when to go in. I felt at times we were committing no one and letting them have quick ball. I felt at other times we were all in, and it was really frustrating. And they're the things, you know, you've got to get right at international level. You've got to be smart. And I think again, especially against Scotland, but where they've got those two terriers of flankers, you know, Jamie Ritchie, I think, picked up man of the match. And he's just a bastard, isn't he? Like, you imagine playing against him, he must be horrible. And
he's a proper athlete, isn't he?
And Watson as well. They're just, you know, they're so aggressive and they cause so much problems.
The nuisance.
They're complete nuisances, and
they're such pests, aren't they?
Yeah, and I don't feel like our
but great,
and I don't feel like our back row were enough of a, not just the back row. I don't feel like any of our players are enough of a nuisance to the Scottish breakdown, really. And all you needed to do was watch the game, the last game yesterday. When you watch the France Ireland game, both sides. You know, even Ireland, when the game was getting away from them, God, the ball was so much quicker than ours, and it just makes life so much easier for you. So, it's these are the big concerns,
it was as if we were playing with a medicine ball, wasn't it?
The
way in which it was moving around or not moving around.
I know.
It was so slow.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It did feel like that. We're gonna finish then, Dan, on asking you kind of what changes you'd be looking to make. And obviously we've got a week without international rugby next week, so there is time for Wayne Pivac to kind of address these things. And he's got a lot of thinking to do with regards to selection. I've said I don't think selection is necessarily the be all and end all here, but we're going to do it because it is a little bit of fun. What changes would you be looking to make to that?
Yeah.
I
think a few changes, but it isn't easy, is it? It's not like, okay, mm-hmm. make five or six changes and everything's okay.
No.
It looks to be bigger than that, doesn't it? Deeper rooted than that. But saying that, there are some changes I'd make. I think that Reece Carey, you know, they're a much improved front row, aren't they? They've got some good scrummages now in that front row. But I thought we creaked at times, and I'd make a change there. I'd bring in Wyn Jones to start. And I think having somebody like Carey coming off the bench would have more of an impact then.
Mm-hmm.
But starting with a sort of stronger scrummage, you know, stronger scrummage in Loosehead, or having Nicky Smith coming off the bench as well, just looking at those turnovers. I thought Carey missed a couple of tackles as well.
Yeah, he did.
Key tackles. And that's not the first time that's happened. You know, you think under Gatland, you know, he doesn't stand for those sorts of things well, does he? And there we are. I'm talking about Gatland more than I'm talking about, you know, Pivac maybe, but which is maybe half the problem. But
I would keep Carey in the match day 23 because I'd bench him and just bring in Wyn Jones to try and shore up the scrum. I do think that Carey is an X factor player who we need to give international experience to. I'm a bit sick of seeing Reece Carey not play that much rugby. You know, I think he should have been playing for Cardiff a lot more than he has done. And you know, you just need him to get that international experience.
Yeah, you need to scrum. There's no doubt that he would have learned a hell of a lot, wouldn't he, from playing that? And as a scrummager, you need to scrummage, don't you? You've got to keep scrummaging. So, and he did it right, I thought. You know,
I'm more concerned about the missing tackles, and
yeah,
again, they're things that your defence coach has got to address as well. But I'm more concerned about that than the overall long-term health of his scrummaging. I think he'll be fine in that regard in the long run. I'd be tempted to go Wyn Jones, but leave Carey on the bench. What about Hooker?
Yeah, Hooker, I would bring in Parry for the next game or D. I think that Elias was a nuisance around the park, so he did put in a shift. Sort of, he hit a lot of rucks, but it was quite a lot of it was almost sort of a little bit unnecessary, really.
Mm.
I'm not going to say sort of wasted energy, but he was very visible, wasn't he? He was sort of around the park, but I don't know how much it was effective then.
Yeah,
and. Okay, you can't comment on the line now because the wind was so bad and they struggled as well. But the game before, it really didn't work. So I think that I'd bring in Parry or D.
The soft penalty for me was really annoying as well. In the first half, when Watkin knocked the ball on, I know it's a split second decision, but don't play it. You can't get that wrong at international level. It's just a daft penalty to give away, and there's those things. Yeah, line out, obviously it's going to be a tough day for anyone in the line out, but I didn't think it was a particularly impressive performance, and I wasn't impressed in the week before, so yeah, I'd be looking to make a change there.
Yeah, I just think, you know, Abdi or Parry come in, just really shore up that front row. Mm. and you know, let's get some aggression in there as well. Let's get some niggle. You know, I want us to toughen up and harden up a bit and really front up and just become a bit nastier.
Other changes in the pack?
So, second row, I'd go again with the same second row partnership. I was expecting more from Will Rowlands, to be honest. I'll be honest with you. Were you?
I didn't think he had a bad game. I didn't think he had a particularly good game. I'm a big fan of his. I think he offers Wales a good ball-carrying option, which we're a bit light on. That's the other thing with Rhys Carey. How often did he have the bloody ball in his hands? You know, like, I know we were struggling.
Can't remember him.
Can we have him running at first phase, you know, at first receiver and trying to actually gain us some yards. He's a wonderful ball carrier. I didn't feel like we used him. But yeah, I mean, again, Rowlands knocks the ball on a regulation ball coming towards him because he's looking at a defender. These are just all things of players not playing with confidence, which worry me. But yeah, I'd probably go the same against Ireland, I think.
Yeah, I think we can't make too many changes. We need to give them time. A lot of these combinations have never played together, have they? So. Yeah. Him and Alan Wyn go again, and we know he's a quality player. Back row is difficult, isn't it? It's very, very difficult. I think Shane Lewis-Hughes, for me, had a very solid game. I thought he was very physical, put in a huge amount of tackles, and he led the tackle count. He actually, the most exciting part for me was that he got those two offloads in, which I can't remember anybody else making any offloads. He did. He made two. We just needed more people to make them. Faletau just doesn't seem at the races at the moment. He's not playing well at all, is he? I don't know whether he's. It's difficult to see if he's having to sort of overcompensate for the balance not being right in the back row. Whether he's just playing poorly himself, it just doesn't. He's just at the moment. It's not working, is it, at all? And James Davis, I think, is a little hard done by a lot of people on his case at the moment. But you know, maybe it would have been different if he got those, you know, if he got those turnovers. But there's going to have to be a change, isn't there, in that back row?
I think you're just praying that Josh Navidi's fit, aren't you? Tipperit might be back from tonsillitis. I don't know what the kind of what the recovery time is for that. I had mine out when I was 8 years old, so I don't know. I don't think Josh Navidi comes back and answers all of our problems, but if he is fit, then he has to play. And you start to worry the fact that he's not played any rugby all season, and we're waiting for him to come in and play at international.
That could be part of the reason why we are. Well, it's one of the reasons, isn't there? There's numerous issues here, but yeah, we're quite often relying on players to come back into form and pick up form by playing international rugby, aren't we? That's an interesting point. But yeah, I think that could Ollie Griffiths, well, you're the man to speak to about him. You know, could he do anything different?
He is comfortably good enough to play international rugby. I think he carries the ball well. He offers that intensity and that aggressiveness you're talking about. You know, look back at last week's game against Ulster. He's one of the few players to do that within the Dragons pack. And I worry about is his long-term fitness, and just, you know, he's only come back and played two games, and you're then going, right, go and play an international game against Ireland.
Yeah, and I don't think he is a quality player, isn't he? And I think he's quite often carried a Dragons pack at times then, isn't he? And played by just being head and shoulders above everybody else in a pack that has played quite poorly at times. Mm. I'm talking about, you know, historical now. So, you know, could he come into the squad somewhere? It still doesn't answer every, you know, mm-hmm. these aren't solutions then. I think that we need to work with what we've got. Mm. But, you know, sounds simple, doesn't it? But just play a lot better, you know. But it part of it has to come to that, doesn't it? It's the guys have just got to perform better
on the
day.
It's not a question of, oh, we got our selection wrong. It's a question.
No,
of
it's not.
Yeah. But what about in the back, Stan? Would you be tempted to make any changes there?
The backs, but they had such poor ball, didn't they? Scrum half doesn't seem to be working for me at the moment. I don't know. Again, I don't know what the answer is. I thought some of Lloyd's passing worked well. Obviously, we kicked a lot of ball away again, didn't we? But I think we're going to have to keep the. I'd go with the same back line. I mean, we can't really tear into the backs too much, can we? With the poor quality ball they had. I thought Owen Watkin defended fairly, you know.
He did, but I didn't get that selection.
It was okay, but
I did not get that selection. I like him, but I just think, you know, I know Tompkins didn't have the best game against France, and perhaps he picked up a knock, but surely Tompkins is more of a Pivac style player, you know, if we're talking about this game plan that they want to play. And I just think giving him and John Fox time to gel rather than making a knee-jerk change in at 12, I don't know. It was odd for me. I'd be picking Tompkins.
Yeah, I do like Watkin. I know he.
Oh, I do.
He divides opinion, doesn't he? But I just, if the ball that we're going to be getting at the moment is going to be so, you know, so scrappy, so poor, quite often on the back step, then I think Tompkins is quite difficult to read, isn't he? Because he'll beat the first or second man, but he quite often runs inside. He'll run outside. He's not there. He's not direct, is he? And I just wonder whether it could sort of further confuse us. But again, I don't have the answers. You know, it's been a difficult night on the pod, isn't it? Because, you know, we just can't. Yeah, that's exactly it, and that sort of sums up the whole situation. I think we're going to have to stick with the back line, really, and just try and build some performances, build some confidence, build some plays, really, and go from there. But it's going to be a very, very tough game again, isn't it?
It is, and fortunately we haven't got to worry about it for next week, but we will be back, of course, to chat to you next week. But before that, we're going to have a regional pod for you in the middle of the week as well, so make sure you stay subscribed. Hopefully that one will be out on Wednesday. If you're not already subscribed to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, make sure you do that. That way, whenever we release a new episode, it'll be there in your, it'll be there on your mobile phone, ready for you to listen to. So yeah, that's to come later on in the week. But a big thanks to Dan for joining us. Thank you, Dan.
Cheers, Jed. Enjoyed it.
A big thanks, as always, to our sponsors at So Coffee Trades. If you want to get your hands on some great coffee, then you can do that at socoffeetrades.co.uk. Hopefully, we're going to be catching up with Scott Otten, the Ospreys hooker, who's currently in quarantine. But we're going to be trying to catch up with him on the regional pod to give you a bit of an update. He's, of course, as well as being Ospreys hooker, he is the founder of our sponsor, So Coffee Trades. So it'd be good to catch up with Scott on the pod. And of course, final thanks to you, the listener. We really appreciate you listening throughout this period of time. And hopefully it can be a little bit cathartic listening to me and Dan have a moan about it. But thanks for listening. And if you've enjoyed doing so, please leave us a review on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, or just simply by telling your mates. But that's it for this episode. Thanks for joining us, and we'll be speaking to you later in the week. Thanks for listening. Sports Social Podcast Network.